1992, we present the fabulous What's the Scenario remix. Whereas there are seven MCs, six which are in physical form, one which is in spiritual essence, and he goes by the name of
Welcome to another episode of the Scenario Remix. We are back. We are back. My brother Matt, how you doing?
Good, man. Hey, we've been on this marathon this week, man. I mean, we're getting that content out.
Yeah, man. Look, man. We had Cam Jansen on last. We had Keith. We had Adonis on. We didn't have some celebrities. We got another celebrity with us tonight too. Right? Look at
y'all tripping.
My homie, man, Rob Desir, anchor in Richmond. Man, thank you for coming on, man. He's been on the podcast before. This dude, actually, if people remember, he's the one that put me on Dom Kennedy. I don't know if you remember, you put me on Dom Kennedy.
Yeah, man.
The president of the summer for several years.
Dude, you know how much I've been downloading all this stuff. I went to go see him in LA, dude, like 2012, somewhere around there. I just happened to be in LA for work. And I went online, Dom Kennedy. I'm going. Right.
Yo, that song still knocks.
But Rob, man, thank you for coming on, man.
Man, glad to be here, man. Glad you invited me back after like 13 years, man. You know what I'm saying? I had to go around the sun. I'm like a Haley's Comet to get on, you know, this podcast.
Oh, man, so let's start out from the beginning, man. You grew up upstate New York, right outside New York, White Plains, right?
Yeah. Actually, Rockland County is where I'm from originally. So grew up there, went to school there, and then obviously went off to school to college. You know, I'm all about the U, University of Miami, got to represent. And then my family ended up moving there down there to South Florida while I was in college. And then that's where 90%...
Oh, so your family moved while you were already at school.
I was in college, you know, while I was at the U. My mom ended up moving down there, but it was probably my junior year. And then, so she ended up moving to South Florida, and, you know, all my siblings, you know, cousins, you know, my dad now lives in Florida as well. He lives in Port St. Lucie. So like I said, parents, siblings, cousins, I got, like I said, 90 to 95% of my family's in South Florida now. So, you know, they've been there for like the last 25 years. So, yeah, that's what it is. But, you know, you can't forget where you're originally from. But, you know, home now to me is South Florida, aside from being living here in Virginia.
Now, let me ask you, though, and this is something I love to ask everybody from up in New York area, is what are your teams? Like, what teams do you rock with? Because it feels to me like there's a lot of different ways that comes together. And what's the dividing line? Like, how does that work for
folks who live in New York, you know, like, most people who are Jets fans or Mets fans. If you're a Giants fan, you're a Yankees fan. Like, that's a whole association. Most people obviously rock with the Knicks in New York. But for me, I'm one team and one team only when it comes to New York, and that's the Jets. I'm a diehard Jets fan. I've been a Jets fan since Richard Todd was the quarterback. You know what I'm saying? I'm down with Leslie Walker. I'm down with Freeman McNeil. I'm down with Mark Gastineau. I'm down with Joe Klecko. I'm down with all of them.
you're in the weeds.
You know? Altoon. What you know about Altoon?
How you feel about Sam Darnold? How's he doing you so far?
I think Sam is doing okay. I mean, I'm not mad. You know, I think once we put some weapons around him, like last season, we didn't have no weapons for the Jets. And first off, I didn't even think the Jets was going to win seven games.
Jets cost me some money.
I didn't think they were going to do that well.
Jets cost me some money last year.
I thought they were going to go like 3-13, like, you know, they did, you know, the previous seasons. You know, I was surprised I thought it was going to win five games max, but they won seven. And then now, you know, the whole division opened up because Brady's gone. So I'm like, you know, we might actually win eight games.
So I guess one of the dope things about being down there in South Florida, though, is that you're still, the time you spent down there is that you still got a chance to be close enough to your squad, you know, going through the Dolphins and whatnot.
Yeah, and I hate the Dolphins. I hate the Dolphins. I hate, pretty much. I'm a Miami professional franchise fan, anything. You know, he, even when they was winning, I didn't care. I'm so all over the place, because when it comes to the NBA, I'm a Golden State fan, and I was Golden State way before they started winning.
We're Run TMC. We're Run TMC.
And then, you know, when everybody started to get on the bandwagon, you're like, what's your connection? I'm like, dude, I just always loved them, you know, so whatever. But those are my three teams. You know, I rock with the Jets, I rock with the Warriors, and I rock with the U. That's it.
I feel like we're kindred spirits, though, because I'm a 49ers fan, and I've been in Missouri my whole life. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, when you connect with a squad, that's your squad. And you ain't got to explain it. As long as you can really share some real pain from back in yonder days. And you got that. You got that if you was an old school Warriors fan and an old school Jets fan. You just have bad years in general.
Yeah. Well, I've only seen the Warriors win a championship. The Jets have not won a Super Bowl in my lifetime. They won one, but it was before I was born.
True. Everybody was born.
But if you're a real Jets fan, like every Jets fan says, it's like next year is our year. Next year. We're like Cubs fans before they won, you know what I'm saying? But like next year's our year.
But I wish you better than I wish them, but that's a whole nother
thing. And actually, you know what, Matt? Since he mentioned that, I think the flashpoint paradox may have happened then.
Hey, I'm gonna tell you, man. All right, so Rob, I'm gonna tell you, this is a conversation me and Daryl been having. I've been reminding a lot of people about this, is that I don't know if you're hip to like comic book lore or anything like that, but there's a thing that's called the flashpoint paradox, where the flash ran so fast in recent time, everything was weird as hell. There's a lot more to it. So I'm going to tell you, the Jets might really be the year, because everything is, because let's look at what doesn't make sense anymore. Tom Brady is a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. The Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl, and look at all the other things we talked about.
The Blues won the Stanley Cup.
The Cubs won the World Series. Even if you just stick in the NFL, a backup redshirt quarterback won the Heisman and is now the number one pick. Like, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. So this might be the Jets' year, man. You never know. But it really would have helped if they would have drafted like CeeDee Lamb or something like that and gave Darnold something to use from the outside.
Hey, man, from your mouth to God's ears, I hope he's listening.
So Rob, how did you end up down at the U, man?
Man, it's crazy because I used to, growing up in New York, my school was always, I wanted to go to Syracuse, man. I wanted to go to the Cuse. When I was a kid, you couldn't tell me because I love.
You got Derek Coleman there.
All them cats, you know, I used to love them, man. So, and then that was my dream school. All through high school, that was my dream school. But, you know, I'll make a long story short, I didn't get in, which like broke my heart. But I had backup schools. It was down to the U or Temple. So I was going to choose between those two schools. So that I remember taking a trip, a high school visiting trip, and it was snowing when I left. It was like February to go take this trip, or March, whatever. It was like these visiting trips. So when I left New York, it was snowing. When I touched down in Miami, it was 85 degrees. So that was like, I was like, damn, I went from night to day. And then I got on the campus and I saw what they was working with, and I was like, they was like going to school, you know, just bikini tops, you know, Daisy Duke shorts, and then in a book bag. And I said, I'm going here.
Crazy, because Miami is a private school, right?
Private school. It's a
and
private
Syracuse school. Didn't let you in, but Miami, that's a.
I don't even know what happened. I don't know what happened. I remember that crushed my dream. So
because that's a state school. Syracuse is a state school. The state school of New York.
Syracuse is a state school. Well, Syracuse is a state school, I believe. Yeah, but it didn't work. But it worked out for the best, man. Because I love my alma mater. You couldn't tell me. I ended up going to what I think is the greatest school out there, you know. But I had fun. I still support. I still show love. I still got everything U gear. My license plate still got Miami on it. So I still got a Florida license plate because I use my mom's address.
Just because you want to have a Florida plate.
That's one of the inside the game of plays right there. I know a whole lot of cats that got cars from Florida that ain't got a house down there.
That's the way to do it. It's the way to do it through the CO2, and if you check engine light, as long as you fail automatically, and if you light, oh man, I remember all those days. Property taxes on your car, Missouri. Come on, son.
Yeah. You reminded me of all the things I owe money on, so appreciate
it. Yeah, what's so crazy is that Matt, because you just paid your tags, right? Like, didn't you like have like a long stretch where you did not have tags?
Yes, it's called a peaceful protest. So I bought a car brand new 2017 in 2017, and I got the tags like right before the quarantine started. but that's what happened. So like, I decided to finally get into the game. I get
How did you extend it out like that for 3 years?
I just didn't pay it. I just drove. Like, I just drove the car. I didn't care. I paid for the car. The laws are stupid, and if the law doesn't make sense, I'm not participating in it.
So you just had the temp tags on there?
No, I just had the 2017 tags on there, and I just drove very swiftly and got to where I needed to get. So that's neither here nor there. I needed some Florida plates. We'd have got there. I'm curious. So, like, when you landed down in Miami, what point in time was Miami in, like, for Miami? Like, what was happening? Like, what was, like, the culture that you landed in for?
Okay, so when I got there, I was at the U from 90. I got there in 93. So they had just won the national championship 2 years prior. But it was actually on the decline. It was a crazy time for football. When I was there, my freshman year, the seniors there, like, The Rock was there. He was still playing. He was a senior. Warren Sapp was there. So they were, like, all seniors. But that was also my freshman year, a crazy year, because I don't know if you guys remember this, but a player was murdered on campus my freshman year.
That
was the same year, my freshman year, I believe, too, was when Sports Illustrated put out that magazine cover, Why University of Miami Should Dismantle Football. If you go back, there was a huge article by Sports Illustrated. So it was crazy, and there was a whole Pell Grant scandal while I was there. They started to be bad, like, seriously. And I
think this is when they had all that talent, but they couldn't get over the hump a little bit. Like, you got Ray Lewis, all them.
Ray Lewis was in my freshman class. So me and Ray were in the same year. We actually had class together. We were in a theater class together. He was crazy. He was funny as hell, man. And, you know, obviously he went on to do great things. He's now a Hall of Famer. So that's great to see. But yeah, we had talent, but it was like we could never get over the hump. Like, they would have, I think my freshman year, I think they went 10-3. If my memory serves correct. But then the next couple of years, they were always like that 9-10 win season. They weren't never in the hunt for the national championship kind of thing like they were before. And then they went down, and it wasn't until after I graduated, they went back up, like, in 2001 when they won the national championship, when they had everybody on that squad, like, probably the greatest football team ever, college football team ever assembled, the 2001 Miami Hurricanes. I dare anybody to tell me there was a better team throughout history than the 2001 Hurricanes, because we had like 13 guys that went in the first, 11 guys that went in the first round of the draft that season. And I think we had 16 guys total drafted from that team. So it was crazy after I left the court.
So you wasn't there when the one dude was that was doing the Ponzi scheme stuff was throwing that money at the players. It was like right after you then. What was his name? The little short guy.
No, that was after. Yeah, but the Ponzi, I was there during the Pell Grant scandal, and obviously with the murder, and, you know,
what was the situation with the murder? What was the situation with the murder?
Player was killed by somebody who was off campus. It was like some kind of situation went on campus. One of the players, I believe, was, you know, some kind of with a girl kind of thing. Dude got mad, went on campus. It was a crazy day. I still remember that.
Well, you know, and the thing I say about the U, it's funny that, you know, you bring that up. I lost sound there for a second. I'm sorry. But the thing about the U, it's funny you bring that up in the times that we talk about stuff in here today, because I was aware of it when it was going on, like, back in the 80s and whatnot with it. I mean, you know, just knowing sports history and whatnot. But, like, I feel like the U doesn't get all the credit it deserves for being, like, a program that just pushed black image forward in sports. Like, you know that, like, the Fab Five did, you know, and they got it up on the court. But I feel like the U is the first, like, real in-your-face, hey, we out here, we going to be us type of football program. And that legacy has really got spread in some ways that I don't think is rooted back to them like it should.
Well, I don't know. I don't know, maybe not if I agree with that completely, because I think the U still has like, this kind of this essence of this kind of thing when people think about it, because when you think about ESPN, I mean, they did two, you know, 30 for 30s on them. Like, what are
right, and I think that was the wake up point, you know.
We got part one, part two, and then we also have another 30 for 30 with Notre Dame, Catholics versus convicts. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, everybody loves the whole mystique of Miami. You know what I'm saying? I know. People could say, oh, they haven't won in 20 years, blah, blah, blah. I get it. But people still, you know, love to see them. When they're good, people watch. You know what I'm saying? It's still, it's still a brand that people know. I know we're all caught up in Clemson and Alabama these days, but shoot, I think Miami gets back in that national picture, everybody would love to see that.
I feel like Miami and Notre Dame is like the Lakers and the Celtics for black versus white people when it comes to college football. Like, still. Like, I hear Notre Dame's won one title in my lifetime, but I still hear all this stuff about Notre Dame and all of that. But I think for black folks, the U represents for them on the other side of that equation against like what Notre Dame stands for.
I hate Notre Dame. I can tell you, I can give you a list of schools that I hate. But when I'm telling you, and my disgust for Notre Dame is up there with Florida State and Ohio State, because you know Ohio State is out of a national championship.
So is that when the beef started? Is that beef starting 02?
That Maurice Claret, when they used an eligible player in the 2002 national championship.
Yeah.
I still remember that vividly. And then, you know, the referee who called that pass interference when Miami actually won the game, when we found out that ref actually was an Ohio State graduate, so he was reffing the game of his alma mater, that still messes me up to this day, son.
And it's also that's one of the worst Ohio State teams ever, too, to win anything.
They should have never been even in the game.
I mean, who else is on that squad that was dope? What, Chris Gamble's like the best player, right? That's probably one pro, right?
Probably. I mean, like I said, anybody who's Ohio State, I don't mess with them.
Uh-oh. We gotta get you on. You met Big O. You know Big O.
I know O. I used to mess with him too, man. I Orlando, man, he used to come on the show when I was doing the shows too back there, man. So I love Orlando. He might be the only Buckeye you know, go somewhere.
Because we do a show with him, the OG hour, man. We do a show with him.
Time you see him.
Yeah.
I'm actually gonna break, do my second quarantine break and stop by his place tomorrow. So I'll be sure to send I'll grab the clip and send it for him just to let you know.
So after Miami, man, what made you decide to want to get into journalism and being an anchor and that side of media? Or just a media period.
Yeah, man, when I was a kid, I always wanted to do it, man. I always tell people this story. I knew that I wanted to be involved in television journalism, sports anchor, when I was like, even though I switched to news now, but like since I was 8 years old, I remember because my dad used to have us watch the news all the time during dinner because we actually had a TV like in our kitchen, like kind of like elevated, like it was like up the on the wall. So it was mounted on the wall. So my dad used to love to watch the news while we'd have dinner and the sports would come on. And I just always remember whenever they were talking about the sports, I didn't know how packages worked and how, you know, somebody was talking and the video was matching the words at the same time. I was eight. I didn't know. But then slowly but surely, I found out that these guys go to football games and basketball games and hockey games for free. And I was like, what? They're like, yeah. You get to go. And then like, yeah, when you're at the game, they feed you too. And I was hooked. That's how simple I was at eight. Free football. Like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
So then, after that, so you go there, did you go to Miami for journalism or what did you?
Yeah, I studied broadcast journalism there. Yeah. So I studied broadcast journalism, did, you know, and internships were really big, you know, so I was fortunate. I did an internship at CNN in Atlanta. That was during the Olympics, the 96 Olympics when the whole.
Oh, so no, that was when it was cracking. So you was there, Freaknik.
Yeah, that was during 96, the Centennial Park, when the whole bomb happened and everything. I was just leaving CNN when that thing happened. Then the following year, I did an internship at ESPN, so I went up to Bristol. So that was an experience. Got to see all the anchors and, you know, see how that worked and then did local internships.
So you was down there at Freaknik then in Atlanta then?
You know what? It's crazy. I'm so disappointed in saying this. I should lie, but I can't. But I actually experienced a Freaknik personally. When I was in college, I never took that trip because one year I was going to go, but I had this, I was seeing this girl at the time and she was begging me not to go with my boys.
Because it was Freaknik.
Homies is going, please don't go. And I was like, whatever. You know, I was simple. And I was like, all right, fella.
She told me not to go.
So that's what, that was your Freaknik story that you almost went.
I almost went. I was like, I seen it on TV. I used to watch them late night hours and get those when people that had the home cameras and bring it back on campus. Like,
yep.
Before the cell phone videos.
Yeah. And you got to think somebody had to put money into that with the camera to have the camcorder. Somebody had some little paper to do that.
They had the camcorders. Oh, my goodness. I'm just throwing it back, watching the videos like 30 times.
So then after you graduate, what was your next steps in like getting into the industry? Like you had these internships, then what was your first step into like jumping into the pond? Like
after school, I took a little while to find a job, but my first TV job was as a morning sports anchor, which is crazy, morning sports. And I went to Mobile, Alabama. So I did that. And it was crazy because I had never been to Alabama prior to getting the job. But I spent about 15, 16 months there, and it was a great experience for me because I got on TV a lot in the morning because morning shows are about 2 hours, 2.5 hours. So I had to do something every half hour. So it was a lot of runs for me, which I needed, you know, to gain that experience. But it was like waking up at 2 in the morning, which was not fun,
yeah.
You know. And then I kind of had split shifts where I had to come back in the afternoon to go work on a story, that kind of stuff. So that's how I did that for a while. And then I moved to Indianapolis, and that was a different kind of experience because now I'm working with professional sports teams, which is what I wanted to do. So I'm covering the Pacers, and I'm covering, you know.
So who's on the Pacers then? Is this Reggie Miller time?
Reggie Miller, Chris Mullin, Mark Jackson was playing there.
So is Larry Bird's the coach then?
Larry Bird was the coach. Yeah, I was there when the Pacers 2001 finals against the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq when they won their first championship. So I was there for that. Peyton Manning obviously was a quarterback with the Colts back then. He had, you know, it was like Marvin Harrison and Edgerrin James was there. So I remember him from the U. So he was there. There was a lot of people, man. So I was there. I worked in Indianapolis for a couple of years. And then obviously after that came to St. Louis, worked there for a grip. And there was so many things that happened during that time. Got to see, you know, the Cardinals win a World Series. Obviously, you know, the Rams, I had moved there after the Rams had just won that 2001 Super Bowl. And then after that, you know, they didn't work out.
No, we got Mark Bulger.
you wasn't bad. You know what I'm saying? You know, could have did a lot worse.
Yeah. Mark wasn't bad until Mark just got hit too much. I mean, just the things just didn't work out for him good in the long term. But so you moved to St. Louis, like at the, like really close.
Oh, the precipice.
The other side of the town at that point, right?
It was still the greatest show on turf. They were still there, but you know, like I said, they had just won that Super Bowl, and they were still together. And they thought that obviously this was maybe going to be some kind of dynasty that was going to happen.
So, so you're there right after the second Super Bowl against the Patriots, or you were there right before that?
What's 01?
02 is that Super Bowl?
When they lost, right? When they lost. That's when I came because they lost in February. Or whatever it was, January, February, and I moved to St. Louis in March of 2002.
So it was right after that. So you moved there, right? So it was already like, oh, we here, we good.
Yeah.
And yep. So you were here for the run where the Cardinals went to the World Series 2 times in 3 years and, you know, got over the hump and all of that.
On the field, when they won that first one, what was that? When they first just moved to Bush 06, 3, right?
06, yeah.
I was there, and I remember, man, like, it was crazy because they were playing Detroit, so – I was on that whole run, that whole playoff run. I went with them to – because like, they started out – I think their division series was against the Padres. It was the Padres mm-hmm. that year, and then it was the Mets, and then it was the Tigers.
Yeah.
And all those trips. And that was fun to cover. That was fun to cover.
Go ahead, D.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Matt. No, I'm just
I was just going to ask you, you know, like already, you know, early in your career like that, you've seen a whole lot of different things, you know, a lot of different experiences like that. But for you, you know, ranging from the Olympics all the way to the World Series and things like that, what's been like the event that you've covered that's like meant the most to you? That's like that thing that's a memorable experience.
Oh, man. Well, I can say, like, obviously, covering a World Series and coming from me, and I was never really a baseball fan. Until I learned to appreciate baseball having lived in St. Louis, because obviously, you know, people there love the Cards, they're Redbirds, they think it's, you know, baseball heaven, you know, all that other stuff. So I learned to appreciate baseball more, and I learned so much more about the game being around those guys in particular. So that was a fun experience. But honestly, I got to tell you, the thing that I loved most was college basketball. And I'll tell you one time, I think one of the best things to cover for me was 05 when the Final Four was in St. Louis and Illinois was on that run. Oh, man, bro, that was one of the most fun. Like Darren Williams, they had
D. Brown,
Luther Head. Whoever that he was coaching, that was one of the most fun things that I ever covered. Because I'll tell you one thing, because what was it? I think it was the Elite Eight game when they were playing Arizona in Chicago. It was at DePaul.
And with Salim Stoudemire.
Oh, my God, son. That was like they were down so much, and they came back and won that game. And I was there because they were playing at DePaul Stadium Arena.
The Rosemount.
Yeah, they were at Rosemount. Yeah, I remember that game so vividly, man. That was like one of the greatest games I saw, like, with my own two eyes, and the energy. That was so fun. And obviously, they came to St. Louis, but they lost to North Carolina, who had a crazy squad. But that was fun, just to see that whole, how that whole Final Four worked. To me, like, it is, the outcome wasn't what I wanted, because it would have been more fun for Illinois to win it, but it was still a great experience.
Is that your biggest sports incident being in general? Like, what is your biggest sports coverage that you had to cover? Like, some of like event that you're like, yo, this was like the shit.
I've been fortunate enough to be around a lot of things. Like, I'm just trying to think, like, in other markets. Like, when I was in Indianapolis, I remember being there the day Bobby Knight got fired. So I remember having to drive. Ooh. That was a huge deal.
Wow.
Man, I remember that. That was crazy. So many things, obviously. I remember even in Indianapolis, my first day on the job in Indianapolis, you know, was I had to go cover it was a Lakers-Pacers preview. So it was my first day there, and I had to go cover the Lakers practice. And the first two people I got to interview were Kobe and Shaq. And I was like, wow, this is a way to start the job, you know? So just little things that I'm just thinking about like that, and – you know, just traveling, you know, going to a lot of things. You know, when we were when I was in St. Louis covering the Rams, traveling with the team was cool. You know, flying on the team charter was a new experience for me. I didn't even know that was possible.
Now, question, before you even go further, did you get involved in the gambling situations that were going on these planes?
Nah. Because, you know, where they had us sit back then. I don't know how it works now, if they still do that, but, you know, media would sit all the way, like, the last three rows. Like, think about it. You just take a regular commercial flight. They would just take it and charter it, and, you know, you're just sitting – the seating chart just works in a way where coaches sit in the front, players sit by, I guess, hierarchy or who's more popular or whatever. Media is in those last three rows by the back. So you don't sit in tight while – all those other middle seats are empty. Media, y'all cramped in for a long flight. You're like, oh, God, you know, I got to do this four-hour flight. Where are we going? Seattle. You're like, damn.
So after St. Louis, what was your path to get to where you are now in Richmond after St. Louis?
So after St. Louis, man, it was crazy, man. It's like it was a wild time for me because, you know, I was there in St. Louis and things didn't work out. My contract actually wasn't renewed, and so I was, like, out there. I stayed there for a little while trying to figure out what was going to go on. And then I ended up moving back home. I went back to South Florida for a little bit, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I just kept pursuing. I thought I wanted to stay in sports because that's all I knew. That's all I did. And then finally I opened my mind and started doing news, and which I didn't think I would ever do. But then news opportunities, I saw a lot more news opportunities than I did sports. And then out of the blue, you know, the station that I work at now in Richmond, you know, they called me and they said, hey, would you be interested in doing a news anchor position? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I did it. And it's been so different, but it's been so rewarding at the same time because it's opened my mind. And, you know, just knowing that obviously while my life revolved around sports, I know sports isn't the only thing going on in the world. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. And I feel like I get to touch a lot more people and give information that affects a lot more people as well.
So my question for you in that is, obviously, it's an interesting time to take that turn. You know, to say interesting is probably underselling it as far as I can. You know, so being able to be on the news desk during a time like this, like, what's been that experience for you and being able to see just the stream of different topics that are coming in that you're having to decipher?
Well, we're all living in some crazy times, but I think
we call it the flashpoint paradox.
But I think that this is one of those moments where, you know, me being on the news side, knowing that I can give out information to a lot more people who are depending on getting updates on whatever's going on topics. Like, you know, two, three months ago, we were all just COVID. Everything was just COVID, COVID. Everything you did was COVID, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like I was part of a team that was giving out information to people that needed to be updated on what's going on in their community. So it's like, you know, we have a platform where we can help so many people. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, doing that, I feel like was really good. And then now we're on this whole, you know, protests and, you know, standing up for, you know, Black Lives Matter and, you know, police brutality. And this is another thing so we're covering. And then even here in Richmond, there's happening like protests, you know, people are just fighting. And then out here we have, you know, Confederate statues out here, which is a huge thing. And then now they're talking about removing them. And it's just so crazy what's happening here. So yeah, just having the tool that we all have with a podcast or radio or TV that we could touch so many people, I think is such an important thing that we do. And we have to be really careful and really informative now more so than ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So, like, you know, with that, though, you know, I mean, there's so much going on with that. I mean, every day is kind of like a new horizon almost. It feels like how quickly things are developing. But, you know, one place that's not been, you know, exempt from this has been the sporting world. I think that you started to see so many things that have filled into that. So now we're kind of at a convergence of the two worlds that you lived in, both with the news, the general news and things like that, but also with how it's impacting the sporting world. So, and I guess COVID as well. I mean, obviously, we're still not out of the woods with COVID. It's just not the number two thing, number one thing on everything right now. What have been your thoughts on the sporting world, though, and like how many different blows it's taken this year as it's trying to figure out where it fits into the big picture of things?
Man, I mean, I know everybody's crying because right now we should probably be watching the NBA finals at this point of our lives. I mean, you know, we should be in like game one or game two of the NBA finals, whoever going to be playing in it, that's where we are. But I think, you know, obviously COVID has to, you know, we didn't know, you know, as a whole, how serious this disease was. So everything had to be put on pause. And I know a lot of people are disappointed about baseball not starting. You know, we don't have basketball playoffs, but we don't know. And, you know, people were getting sick and people were dying because of this. So we had to shut it down. And I still think that we're still getting a little too lax, you know, with what's going on. I know people are out there protesting, but there's not a lot of practice in social distancing, air masks. And I'm like, you know what? Everybody's talking about, like, there's going to be a second wave. I'm like, we're not going to get out the first wave because you know, this thing right here, I mean, I know it's a movement, but I think a lot of people are forgetting about COVID. It's still there. It is still there. So now I know what would really hurt me is if there was no football come fall, but I can understand why. But shoot, man, I don't know, man. I mean, sports is so important to so many people, you know, but if we don't do it because we're trying to keep people alive, I understand that because people are like, oh, we can have football, but we're not going to have fans in the stands. You know, and they're like, oh, that doesn't make any sense. I'm like, it does make sense. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You want 6,000 people, you know, basically serving as a petri dish at, you know.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And look, I mean, I'm a soccer guy, so, like, the Bundesliga has come back up, and, like, they start pumping in the sound. You can't tell no difference, honestly. Like, with the sound, as a fan, it's like, if you're watching from TV, you can't tell the difference.
And who's ever controlling the sound of these games, because – when it gets really close,
it goes with. It's just not one long sound. They like change it by what's going on. Like if it's a corner kick, like
Well, and I think they benefited from some of the early attempts to have live sporting events because it's been like 3 months now since like WrestleMania, and that was just weird. I was just like, pro wrestling without fans at it is really strange. It's like community theater on steroids, maybe literally. But you know,
they should put some CGI effects and just put a crowd in there, make
something.
Everybody...
Well, see, and so that goes to a story that we had on the show a couple of weeks ago where some people did try to do some artificial fans, but it didn't quite work out the way that it was.
The Korean league with that the Dallas. Yeah.
I heard about that.
That's not the way, but one thing I did, I don't know if you got a chance to see it. I think that the UFC has really done a good job of showing how you can have sports be similar. You got to shoot it a little differently, go about it, but you still have your environment. And once you get into it, you really don't notice, from TV at least, how much of a difference it is in things like that.
Yeah, I think that you can definitely be creative. I mean, modern technology, we can do so many things, man. So like whether they put some fake fans in the stands or just add the audio for the noise effect. I mean, we can do it. It's just making sure those people are safe, because especially when you're talking about football or, basketball, basketball is a little different because you got 12 guys, but still those 12 guys got families they go home to, and, mm-hmm. Everything is 6 degrees of separation. So, and when you're talking about football, you got about, 53 man roster, practice squad. You talking about like 80 guys working around each other every day. And then when they go on the road, you're tackling somebody. You don't even know what they've been doing all week. It's going to get real tricky. It's going to get real tricky for football.
Yeah, I think that the mental toll that's going to take, I think, is underrated too. Because I mean, those guys, that's in those guys' heads. I know that even going to the grocery store right now, like I sit there and think about, man, what's this mean? What's this? I got to be careful. I gotta wipe it down. So let alone being at the dog park. That seems like the last
one. I always wondered this. Mm-hmm. I wondered, could the NFL come up with a new helmet, like a motorcycle helmet, so that way they're not breathing on each other or something? That maybe that
might be out there in a Darth Vader costume if I had to be. If you hear me breathing from 25 yards away.
Yo, man, give them some kind of gas mask or something.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. But I wanted to, speaking of the NFL, man, obviously, when we have racial turmoil or anything of that, the NFL is obviously not going to be too far away from the center of that pretty soon. And, of all people to step into the middle of this, Drew Brees does,
Shout out to Drew Brees.
It's just been a really weird thing to do. So I just want to throw this out here and everybody kind of throw their thoughts in. What was Drew thinking when he says that? In knowing the world that he's in and knowing the sport that he plays, what compels you to do that? Kind of is the catalyst of this whole situation.
Shoot, I think Drew thought he was saying something that was poignant to the moment when it really wasn't. Where he kind of went off topic. I think it was Shannon Sharp said something how we're talking about a certain issue, but somebody else wants to flip it and talk about other issues and not address the issue that's at hand. They're mm-hmm. that's not what we're talking about right now. We're talking about, this, and you don't really want to address it. You want to talk about some other stuff. And, he just brought it up. It had nothing to do with the conversation. And now he's looking real silly.
I think, to me, the thing that really stood out about it is that might have been the type of thing, and this is a measure and stick thing I'll put out there, is that might have been the type of just a stance that you could have taken a year ago and not caught as much heat. But to say that right now, for me, that really ended up being a litmus test for how serious people are about every aspect of this right now. Like, either you're in or you're out. Like, there's no middle ground to it. And to me, the thing that really stood out was that I get up early pretty much every morning, period. But Drew Brees apology, I got up at 6:10 that morning or something like that. And Drew Brees apology woke up with me. It's like, if you go out, you run early in the morning and you see the other people on the street and you're just like, oh, hey, what's up? I see you out here. Like, his apology was out at 6:15. And that's when you know already that you'd have messed up. You got to get out there. Like, Drew Brees was apologizing to a dude that had broke up with his girl and was trying to get back with her right away. Only it was his girl was millions of people around the entire country.
Yeah. And the other thing too, I've thought about this for the longest time, ever since the whole cap thing. And how we talk about the national anthem
how it played such a part in the movement and what Cap was kneeling for. And I wondered, like, now more than ever, because I thought about this 3 years ago, but like, I wonder now, would the league consider not playing the national anthem before games now anymore?
Yo,
like, because I'm like, you know, because it started because it was a money thing from jump anyway, because they didn't used to do it, and then they did it, and now because Cap was making a stance, they made it even more of a deal, not forgetting that they didn't do it before. So I feel like, what if they don't play it at all anymore? Like,
I feel, hey, listen, Rob, I tell you what, I was literally just thinking that myself. Like, I had a whole big status built out on Facebook, but I was just like, I don't feel like dealing with it right now. So I didn't do it. But to me, yeah, absolutely. I think that the national anthem is like a nostalgic thing that people do just because you do it at sporting events. But never before in history have leagues been less American. And I say that to say you have more people from more places that aren't represented by that national anthem. Like, for example, at a Major League Baseball game, you need to be playing the Dominican national anthem damn near more than you need to be playing the Star Spangled Banner. Like, but like, does it still have a place? And I don't think so. I don't think it's important. I think that you can erase all of this by just saying, you know what, this isn't worth it. However, the other side of that, and Daryl, with you being the blackest person I know, I want for you to,
here we go,
to speak into this too. That also, some people might say that if you take it out now, you take away a chance for people to make that cultural stance at a game, and that could be seen as a league just trying to remove itself from the frying pan that is that discussion. So have we, because of the fact that we've made it such a big thing now, can we be done with it, or is it now just something that is used as a pedestal no more?
I'm trying to think. So it's me being the blackest person, you know, is the king of the blacks.
Yes,
is shout out to Howard Stern, the actual king of the blacks on Howard Stern show. I'm getting less and less blacker, you know, as the days go by.
You're not at all, but please continue.
No, I'm just saying, when I say this, I think of all this stuff that's going on, period, with the flag, with Cap, Drew Brees. This is an overall black statement. I don't trust none of them. I don't trust none of these folks that went down at the beginning. I don't trust none of them. And that's my, and that's maybe the blackest thing I said on this show in a long time. Is that
this
I don't trust none of them.
This might be one of the rare times where I'm actually blacker than you. And I don't want no apologies, because apologies are becoming
I don't trust
trendy.
None of them, no. I don't trust none of them with it.
So apologies are becoming trendy, and people mm-hmm. are apologizing for that. I feel like Drew Brees has like unconsciously made himself to be like the mobilization of this in sports. Like, he's become the person now that people are going after. Because it brings me to another point that Rob, that we had mentioned before we got on the air, just kind of chatting things up. But now, if you talk about 3 years ago, a big difference now is that the players are actually going out themselves and saying things, and there's a support for things that are happening now, because it's a much greater crossover cultural situation that they weren't saying before, which makes me think, you know, has Cap now finally, like, everything that happened with him, has it now come to fruition? Is this a big payoff of the stance that he took now happening, since now it's mobilizing more players to say things it might have done if he hadn't said what he did or did what he did in the first place?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I definitely believe that. I mean, with any movement, it always takes one person, and people don't realize what he's doing, and a lot of times until years later. You know what I'm saying? It's like you gotta suffer the consequences now so people can reap the benefits later. So I think, like, now everybody is starting to, you know, the folks who are totally against what Cap did, they're like, oh, you know what? Maybe I kinda get it now, but it's just like, yeah, but you don't get it still. You know what I'm saying? It's like people are, you know, and, you know, maybe nothing is ever too late, but I think a lot of things sometimes are too late. Like, you know, like the whole Rod, you know, Goodell's apology, we was wrong, and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know. I'm not buying it.
Like, no.
I was like, I don't trust him. It's like, come on, you know, like, but, you know, in that whole apology, I don't believe he mentioned Kaepernick's name once. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's my thing. No. Yeah.
So it's just like, so, like, what are you apologizing for? Like, we should listen. Well, why didn't you say we should have listened to Cap? You know what I'm saying?
Let me help. I can explain that situation. I can see this. I can see exactly what that is. Roger Goodell gave the ultimate fuckboy apology of all time.
Ooh.
Where everybody's stuck in the house. Everybody's feeling a type of way. And now he's going to hit you up. Like, I heard this was happening with a lot of women and maybe some dudes this was happening to, too. Not my life, thank God, because it would cause a lot of problems and how that's set up. But ever since the quarantine started, you'd have had some of them exes that have been popping back in like, hey, checking to see how you're doing. You know, just wanted to, you know, to say, hey, I'm feeling a different type of way. These times have really made me kind of think about things, how it happened between us. And I just want to say, oh, I'm sorry. That's Roger Goodell. And fuck that, Roger. I'm not listening to that. That is a fuckboy apology. And he came up with, just because everybody else was apologizing, see if he can get back in the good. With it. Hey, Roger Goodell would have to come on TV with some Paul Kenai on with the box of chicken and an entire check is written to the Know Your Rights camp. It's your salary.
Yeah, and pull it in the league.
You know what? Yeah, I think it does. But here's the problem. I don't want Cap to play now. It's been 4 years. I mean, and this isn't – and I don't want him to come back and then justify people being like, oh, see, he wasn't that good. We did all of this for that. I don't want anything to drag down the fact how that brother left the game and the circumstances that he did. And I also don't want anybody's pity fuck either, where you're just like, all right, come on in. You know, it's cool. Come on back. It's good. You can play. I don't want that. They very well could open the door, but now I feel like there's guys that, like, take Cam Newton, for example, who doesn't have a team right now. Now, to move him back and to give a seat to Cap ahead of another brother that's not getting a job, to me, that really says it's a ceremonial thing and we're doing it just to do it.
Well, wait a minute. But what about the 50 or 75 quarterbacks, the bums that they got off the street that they signed who had not played football for years before you even Cap a look.
And I agree. And you know what, Rob, if we was having this conversation and this event was happening 2 years ago, I would feel super passionate about Cap playing because I would feel like at that point in time, I'd be like, yeah, this is still going to move it forward. I'd have a lot more of those Ali coming back from the Vietnam.
So is this Mike Tyson coming out of jail for you? This Mike Tyson coming out of jail for you?
No, because Mike Tyson came out of jail and was still knocking cats out.
But there were some bums. He fought some bums, though, on the way.
For warm-ups.
Yeah, I mean, the Peter McNeely's and that type of stuff had to happen. Also, and I'll admit in any second, I could be wrong in his stance. Maybe Cap does need to play. Maybe he needs to come back and do it. I don't want, when we had a chance to bring him back last year, when he went out and did what he did, showed what he could do, and it still, for some reason, wasn't good enough, and the league set up all of those hurdles for him coming back. Him now just to all remove them, and then we create some white hero who signs him to a contract, and now they reap all the benefits of selling all the jerseys that they definitely removed from the back. I'm very skeptical about him being used as a chess piece in this fake NFL Paris scenario.
It's valid.
Yeah, I don't think people need to say like, oh, Cap needs to play, like, but there needs to be some kind of goodwill for him. I mean, I don't know if I want him to play. I could feel mad on that. But at the same time, I do kind of want him to play like somewhere like in New Orleans, like to be the backup there and like take over for Taysom Hillsom or whatever.
But Jameis Winston is there. I don't want to take Jameis' job.
Yeah, I mean, Jameis can go. He can go get some crab's legs from somewhere else, though, man.
He'll Jameis done got LASIK surgery at his eyes.
I know.
He ain't throwing no more INTs. He's ready, son.
30-30 Jameis, baby. His vision, 30-30 last year. He tried to get it down to 20-20 this year.
That's the next 30-30. Jameis.
It's Jameis Winston's vision.
It's a really complicated thing, man. I mean, and it's and I don't know if there's one way. Obviously, I would never be against Cap having a job and being out there and playing, thriving. I would love it. I just wonder if I really feel skeptical about them now coming back to him and doing it. Quite honestly, one thing we've really gotten good at as a people, I think, is speaking for Cap and what he wants. You know, we got to make sure Cap even wants to do it at this point still. Who knows?
Yeah, that's a good question. But I wouldn't be surprised if you don't want that check.
It's a nice one. I tell you what, bring Cap back, give him Drew Brees' contract, swap those roles. We could do like trading places like Eddie Murphy with Drew Brees and Colin Kaepernick, and I'll be down. He'll all the way in for sure.
What New Orleans, I mean, New Orleans at this point could do that, and they'd be the blackest city ever if that happened.
They would certainly have the love of the black people, unlike very few places have.
Because they're going to what, Taysom Hill or whatever is after that?
Taysom Hill is like there. He's like, he's kind of like, what's the position I would use for him? An X factor kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but you can't play in New Orleans, though. You can't have a Mormon play in New Orleans. It's Catholic. You can't do that. It's Catholic, man. Black people there. You can't do that.
Man, you could say they got them all. They got everything in New Orleans. They got voodoo. You know what I'm saying? So
No. But I'm just saying, though, the best thing for them marketing-wise, they ain't going to win no championship. But if they did sign Cap, I'm getting into my black conspiracy bag. They could sell merch out the ass.
Oh, yeah, they definitely could, you know what I'm saying? But they got Jameis. Like I said, he got the new surgery, you know.
I'm surprised you're talking so well about a Florida State person like this.
No, trust me. You know me. I don't mess with nobody. My brother went to FSU. Half the time of the year, I don't talk to him.
But we're forgetting a big part of this, though. If Colin Kaepernick did go to the New Orleans Saints, he would have to take Taysom Hill's jersey because they both wear the same number. So all about this.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm all about that.
He'd have to give up the 7. I don't care. Yes. I don't care if Cap gets signed, I don't care where he goes. Whoever's wearing 7, and I'm trying to think of any elite quarterbacks right now in the league who wear 7. I can't think of one. But even if there was one, he'd have to give it up.
Yo, if Cap signed with the Broncos, he should wear 7. I don't care.
Oh, yeah. Elway lied about talking about giving him a contract in Denver. We know that never even happened. So he ain't going to Denver, that's for sure.
Elway was fronting.
And then Elway tried to put this thing like, oh, I need to listen, this whole message. Some of these teams trip me out, like Elway with his message, Goodell with his message. You know, when was it earlier this week when everybody was posting the blackout posts on social media, and I saw Washington, you know, put that on their team, you know, the NFL.
But your team is the Redskins.
I'm like, Washington posted a blackout? I was like, that's kind of like an oxymoron. They got the most racist nickname for a team out there, and they're going to talk about Black Lives Matter. So that just tripped my mind out.
They in D.C.,
the Washington football team's racism quotient is the highest of any sport team between Daniel Snyder and between the name of that team. There's no quotient that's higher. Like,
they clearly that social media post. That was somebody, whoever runs their social media site, that person did that.
It was somebody black.
Mentioning
people that are lying, Norvell at the Florida State just blatantly lied that he talked to his players.
We gonna give you room here, Rob, you take this. Make some room for you. I'm gonna pour myself a drink and just let you go. I'll be back.
Uh-oh, he didn't brought the U out.
Okay, now let's talk.
So I thought Willie Taggart bad, though. I think they did him real bad. They didn't give him time at all.
I question, first off, why Willie wanted the job. I know why Willie wanted the job, because he didn't want to be out there in the Northwest. He didn't want to be out in Oregon, even though he had a bomb team.
Yeah.
I don't know why he wanted to leave the Pac-12 when he had a really good squad, but he was at UCF. Was it UCF or USF?
No, he's at USF. USF.
He was at South Florida, and he had built that, then went to Oregon, then went to FSU, and he just, man, he was just at a bad time because them quarterbacks were trash.
But they said all the players respected him and really liked him. Like, yo, like.
You know, it's one thing being a player's coach, but if you're not getting results on the field, it doesn't matter what kind of coach you are.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Bobby Bowden, when he was a coach, he didn't know half his players' names. He didn't know half these – like, three, get over here.
Number three.
Well, so, I mean, but I think that, you know, that's a good call out, though, because sometimes that player's coach is like kind of like the moniker that's the cousin of he's a good game manager. Like, don't give me that. Either call me a good coach or don't call me at all, because that can fool around and get you ushered up out of there. But, you know, I thought it was, you know, that's a good call out, though, about, you know, what happened with Norvell down there, because it made him the funny thing about that explanation was, he says that, all right, I actually text everybody, but he gets called out by Marvin Wilson, who's going to be a top 10 pick next year, who's like literally like stepping up to the plate being like, nah, man, that didn't happen. And like the thing I'm starting to see a lot of that you didn't see at a lot of levels before is these college players are calling out these coaches for how they're acting and doing things. And one thing I've seen is a lot of lines that get drawn to Kaepernick and what's happening now. But, you know, when you go back even further than that, look at the walkout that happened at Mizzou. You know, mm-hmm. there are a lot of people that were very critical of the players and the things that happened there during the racial uprising there. I mean, and I'm not saying this simply just because I'm a Mizzou alum, but
yeah, that you are.
Time out real quick. So for what Florida State is to you, Mizzou is that for Daryl. So we'll just
that's not true. That's not true. That's not true.
But he left the state and then turned his nose up at it after he left for college. But even then, it was unheard of for college players to be doing what they were doing now. And now you've got, you know, people at Ole Miss and South Florida, they're doing walks and things like that and mobilizing what's there. Players are calling out coaches. Like, I think that the Drew Brees and things like that can always get the big piece of the news. Michael Jordan putting the money up that he did can get the big piece of the news and things like that. But when you start to see how deep it's getting into the culture of just saying, like, listen, we're not just going to be athletes. We're not going to just fall in line. All the way to the point where college kids are doing it, to me, that shows the real difference that's happening in the last week compared to where things were at before.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad to see these young cats doing their thing right now, because this is just one of those moments in time that they have to capitalize on this moment and show that they're not going to sit idly by, you know, like they have the power to change so many things right now, like with the NCAA, with professional sports, man. This moment right now is really going to let us know what's going to happen for the next decade, man. Like, so many things can change right now if these cats all, you know, band together and link up, like, with these coaches, you know, Norvell Lyon, like Florida State always does.
Yeah, because he said something about, like, gold chains, like, no gold chains, no gold teeth. no durags, or it was something crazy like.
Wait, Norvell. Wait, where did he come from?
Memphis.
Right. Yeah, he came from Memphis, but that's one of the blackest cities ever. So
that's why I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
Memphis, like the cats on his squad wasn't rocking gold and durags. And Memphis, come on, son.
You know they were.
I know Norvell seen Hustle and Flow.
Yeah. You
know he had to watch it at least twice.
I mean, come on, man. Like, people
that are going to Memphis were born with gold teeth and do-rags on. It's just the way that they showed up.
Now, they know all that. They know some barbecue, they know the jazz music, and they know how to get down. You know what I'm saying? They had to listen to, you know, 8-Ball and MJG at least once. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Dolph, somebody.
Project Pat is from Memphis, man. Come on now. I mean, it's just the way that it is.
Autumn Cat.
So why do you feel – why is your disdain for Florida State? Like, why do you think they lie so much? What is the thing about them lying so much?
I mean, everything about Florida State is trash, dog. I don't even know why we have this conversation. You know, I got the hat on.
I have no dog in the fight. I'm just saying.
He say that every time he got a dog in the fight. So there it is.
No, I don't.
The fight is chaos. He about to jump in and just say he liked the Gators for a second just to see how it do you.
Nah, I'm not a good Florida fan.
It's all good. It's like I said, it's good to have rivalries.
Most definitely, man.
I'm a big fan of rivalries. I remember, you know, in for Matt, he said, from Mizzou, Illinois, you know the shootout that used to happen inside mm-hmm. the dome every year, Edward Jones Dome. That was fun to watch, man. Seeing them cats battle was always fun to watch, man.
And we finally got both of our rivalries back. We've got Kansas game coming back on basketball and football. We got they're working on getting the football game back for Illinois Mizzou, which used to really rock down at the
No, dome. That was popping. That was popping out the dome.
And bragging rights, you know, which we got. So yeah, I mean, Rob, you gotta have rivalries, you know what I mean? But you know, at the end of the day, it works out. Now I'm gonna ask you real quick, because I'm asking everybody about this because it's been the cultural event of the quarantine. Last Dance. What are your thoughts on The Last Dance and, you know, just getting to kind of go back to that? Because that's, you know, that's a heyday right there for our generation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was really well done. I mean, 10 parts, and the fact that nobody had any real sports to watch. Everybody was so focused every Sunday night. It was just like, leave me alone. Last Dance is on. Don't call me. Blah, blah, blah. Everybody was like that for like 5 weeks straight. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that was a cool thing. It was interesting to note that as these episodes came out, the people who were part of it who didn't like what was said or how it was edited or this was a lie, this wasn't true, blah, 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 all these things coming out. That was interesting to know. Like, I knew Mike was on another level, but all these people didn't like the way they were portrayed. Like, Horace Grant, I'm going to punch Mike in the face now. You know what I'm saying? That's crazy, you know?
Mike is the one that greenlit all this, because I think he was the last one to be able to give the footage away. Like,
Mike has the last word on everything because it's Mike. But, like, you know, if Horace Grant was like, nah, it wasn't – the way you guys edited my comments wasn't really true. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the way they did, you know, what's funny to me is how they did some of these people so dirty. Like when they did Gary Payton, Gary's like, yeah, man, all I do is you just had, you know, just get in his face.
And you know, that conversation was an hour with Gary Payton and they took out 2 minutes.
Mike's thing like this, he's like, Gary Payton don't know Jack. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, you know, that it's just funny the way they did people so dirty.
The one
like
person that. I wanted to interview was Craig Hodges. Why didn't interview Craig Hodges?
Craig was like, yeah, I don't know why they didn't get on Craig.
Because he came to the White House in a dashiki.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, I got an article assigned to me yesterday about just doing, I got an open-ended number, which I hardly ever get when you get deal with media, when limits are on everything these days, don't go past this, do that. About listing activist athletes of any, you know, of any ilk, and just writing different captions out of it. And like, I'm looking at like
Craig Hodges.
Craig Hodges is definitely in there.
And he gave George Bush a note.
He's one of the lost activists for the thing. It would have been interesting to see how he would have fit into the flow of that. Him, of those
him, Bulls him, games. Is D, you know, another cat we used to be, D. What was old boy name?
Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf?
Yeah, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Yeah, Chris Jackson.
Chris Jackson, yeah.
He was like, before there was Cap, it was Chris Jackson, man.
Yeah.
That when he, and all he did was pretty much pray during the national. He didn't sit it out. He was praying, losing his mind.
And he was still giving it to cats in the Big Three, though, last year. Like, he was still putting up buckets.
Oh, that's one thing that gets forgot about Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. When he was at LSU, he was a murderer.
And keep it that, it was him and Shaq together.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a beast.
Like, he's one of the greatest guards in SEC history. I think he's second in scoring in LSU history, and that's only because Pete Maravich was there. So, I mean, like, that's insane. Hey, Rob, I want to ask you this, man, before we get out of here, because I know that this is something that I got some thoughts about, so I'm really curious to hear yours. You know, I think it's pretty regular to hear things where people criticize the media's hand in things. You know, the media's doing this, the media's doing that, you know, said things like that. But you made a great point earlier saying, you know, that you take a lot of pride in being able to be that conduit to people and get the message to them, you know, especially when we're talking about things with COVID and things like that. But, you know, during these times when we have all these different things going on, but especially right now with the uprising and what we have as far as what I pretty much labeled to be right now at least being a progressive civil war, which could become a lot more in short term. How do you feel about the voice of being an African-American in media and being a person that is responsible for putting that word out there about, you know, the role that you play in that and being able to really say what's in your heart, but still doing, you know, doing your job too, because you still have a job to do at the same time?
Yeah, man. It's a good question, bro. I mean, I think, and you know this as well as I do, the first thing we have to be sure is that we're presenting facts. So once we get past the facts, then I think we as Black people in media have, I guess, I don't know, maybe a pass is the word I want to use, but maybe this is our moment where we can inflect certain things that people may not be aware of while presenting the facts. You know, it's just like we can open more minds and eyes now more than ever because people are looking at us during these situations wondering, oh, I wonder how Matt feels about it. I wonder how
Darryl. A little bit more anecdotal.
You can really just, you know, drop something on them now more than ever. Just, but we have to be really careful. Like, don't get caught up in, we can't get caught up in you know, somebody saying something and be like, yeah, we need to add that to our pieces or our stories, because this is what we're really angry at. I should say this. We can't come across angry, but we have to show that we are frustrated while presenting the facts, but giving to it, staying real, and just letting people know that above anything else, yeah, we're black men, and yeah, this is how we feel about the situation. You know, I saw a meme, and I think this is one of the greatest memes I've seen through this whole protest. And it was just like, you know, it's not like a media thing directed to your question, but it was like, I'm paraphrasing here, but it said something like, I think it was like, white people should be, I forgot how it goes, something about white people should be happy that black people are only asking for equality and not revenge. I was like, whoa. I was like, you should be happy that all we're asking for is equality and not revenge. And I was like, wow, that's crazy.
That's a hell of a, yeah, that's a hell of a way to look at it. That's real. I don't know if you got a chance to see it, if either of y'all got a chance to see it, but I think that you just highlighted something that I watched yesterday on ESPN, where on, what is it, First Take, that Maria Taylor was on.
And, yeah, called out Breeze, right?
Yes, and she just flat out, she explained it so eloquently, but I think that I know that she did it in a restrained way. Like, every time she opened her mouth, she was like, I gotta be careful what I say next, because I can make a point, or I can change the whole trajectory of my career. Mm-hmm. And she walked the line so perfectly that she got the message out of being tired, of saying that we're tired of the same result coming back, and that we're not gonna sit back and just allow this to continue to happen. And for me, I looked at that and I was like, that's strong. And I was telling my fiance about this, where I said is that she flipped her hair before she talked. She did all of the context clues for us as black people. We knew it was getting ready to be a scene right quick, but we know that she was trying to still do what she needed to do to get her point across. And I think that that's a really important point that you just made, saying that we need to take the platforms that we have and make sure that our points land. Gotta make sure that your points land, because otherwise, I kind of look at it like gymnastics. You can do all the crazy flips and stuff in the air that you want to do, but if you don't stick the landing, people aren't going to remember all the great things that you just did or said before that. And I think sticking that landing is really important for us in media right now.
Right. And we can't, like, as much information as out there, when you're using your platform, like when you're writing something, if you just write something, if there's just one sentence in whatever you write, however long that article is, if that resonates with people, that's what they're going to remember, man. So it's just like, say something, like, you're like, boom, you're like, oh, smack. Yeah, that's true. And like everything else just opens somebody's mind. Like, they're just blown. They're like, wow, I never looked at it like that, or I never thought about it like that. So like, as you're writing, you know, you just got to do what you feel, you know, don't force it, because whatever is going to come out, it's going to, you know, you're a professional, you've been doing it for a while, so you know what you're doing. But like, if you can put something in there that makes somebody go, oh, smack, that is true. That's all you need, man. This is the time that people are paying more attention. So when you put something in there, it got some sauce, people are like, damn, I felt that.
And I think that on the other side of, you know, being in front of the camera the way that you are is that being able to have that visualization of, you know, and I hate that it is this way, but it just is, of being a collected, smart, articulate, well put together brother who's saying what it is that needs to be said. That's a tool as well. You know what I mean? And that's something that, unfortunately, to some people, they look at as being the exception when it's really the rule. But we still gotta, I think we gotta be great at taking the blows that we're gonna take, which are what we're fighting against right now. It's those blows, those assumptions where you have to say, oh, it was a peaceful protest. Like, what the hell? Like,
oh my God. Oh, you just said that. Man, all this week, all these scripts that I'm reading, everything is a premise with peaceful. I'm like, why are we saying peaceful in front of protest? When it's looting and rioting, why don't we just say that? Why do we always have to premise protest with peaceful? I hate doing that. I really do.
And I think that some of that is that exceptionalism, where people that write that stuff and look at those things, look at it because they expect it to be something else, because they look at what's involved, and then they take those words and put those words in front of people like you, and it's like, well, wait a minute now. Before we go reading this, hey, let's make it clear on what this is.
But with me, like, and people know me here, man, like, I I sometimes have a tendency to not hold my tongue. Like, I said that actually on the air. I was like, look, I know we're saying peaceful protest, and I hate that we have to say peaceful in front of protest, because people should automatically assume that every protest is peaceful.
It's not peaceful or not peaceful.
But not, because we're singling out, you know, every, you know, TV is one thing, like media is one thing. The one small bad thing that shows something bad, then that's the whole example for everything that's bad. You know what I'm saying? Right. So if it's one small incident, then we got to highlight that incident and go, well, you know, 95% of these things are good, but then there's these five that are bad. And you're like, well, why are we focusing on the 5% that are bad? You know what I'm saying? But that's what we do, because it draws an audience.
Yeah, and I think that those are some of the things we're fighting against in perceptions right now, is that that perception of exceptionalism has to stop, where it's just like, when Black people do something that's not what you expect, it's an exception or something like that, and that's not the case. And that goes back to the point about, hey, all we're saying is call it down the middle, not get right what you got wrong in the past, even though Bob Johnson came out and said that total for reparations is about $14 trillion, and then brought out that big, long list of where other people have received their comeuppance, and we haven't gotten a dollar yet. So we could fight that, but like what I say right now is, let's get this fight to get people's eyes open, and while we got people's eyes open, let's let them take a look at what we really know that we are. And yeah, and a feeling at that point is, by any means necessary.
Oh, wow. Okay, Malcolm X.
So, yeah, no, you're the blackest person on this show right now, man.
I told you, every once in a while, my 75 overtakes my 25. Most of the time, I sit at about a 90%. My 10% being what I'd learned from the points that Rob was just making about, hey, man, listen, you can really say what you think, but sometimes you got to make sure that your words are decipherable by everybody.
Right. No, but I think, but again, man, I mean, we all are in a position where we can really, really have some impactful, you know, moments or statements or things that we can do that can really resonate with a whole lot of people, because especially, you know, especially in St. Louis now, because obviously, you know, with Mike Brown 6 years ago, and I just saw that. Because
you left right before Mike Brown. You left right before Mike Brown.
I left right before Mike Brown. So there was Mike Brown, everything in Ferguson. Now Ferguson just elected the female mayor.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all these people are paying attention to all of this stuff. So everything is coming back with, you know, with Mike Brown now. And then obviously, you know, rest in peace, the police officer at the Lee Jewelers.
Yeah, Lee Bronson Jewelry, yeah.
So that's crazy. But like now, like people are just watching all of us, you know, TV, media, you know, print, you know, social media, all of that stuff. Everybody who has a voice, they want to see what you got to say, what you're doing, man. So like, you got to use that, man. You got to like really like show like, hey, look, you know, we got something to say. And while I may not be I'm not the most eloquent speaker out there, I know sometimes I can say something when I want to say it, if I'm really passionate about it, I feel like I can make an impact.
And we can, and we can, and we all can. And I think that that's the thing that we all have to stop and use and look at every platform we've got and look at it more critically than we might have in the past. I mean, I think President Obama's address earlier this week where, you know, he just took it upon himself to say, yeah, maybe it's not usually the place that a past president, comes in, but I got a platform, I have a responsibility, and I need to do this. And I think he used that time amazingly well to get a lot of message out that wasn't just about him, but it's just, those are the type of things that, you know, that I look at. I say, how many different ways can I reach how many different people, and how many different messages can we get out in that time? And I think that that's what we've tried to do with this show over the last 2 weeks, is get to as many different platforms, as many different people, in as many different areas as can speak as possible, and realize all the ways that we can leverage what we need to do through that.
Yeah, that's great, man. Like, you guys get them all, get Black, white, Hispanic, you know, everything, man. You know, get that whole rainbow, man. Baskin Robbins, 32 flavors, whatever it is, you know what I'm saying?
Rob, where can everybody hit you up at, man? Where can they follow you, check you out?
Oh, man, so you guys can follow me on my social media pages, all Rob_Vizier, same thing. Facebook is just Rob Vizier. I think there's a fan page too through my job. Yeah, so yeah.
Fan page through your job, so you don't even run that, basically, you're saying.
No. It's mine, but like it's so weird. Like, I have two Facebook pages for one's for work, and there's a fan page because they made it transfer over. Either way, if you look at my you'll find it. But like Twitter and Instagram, it's Rob_Vizier. So that's how you can do it.
Well, man, I hope that we could get back into this fall, man, and we can get back to some of the things we talked about. We can get this college football. We can get back into this league.
Rob, you're into soccer, right, Rob? You're into soccer, right?
Soccer.
I mean, I watch it. I'm not like – I can't break down every player on every team, but, like, I do follow a little bit of, you know, the Bundesliga and La Liga. And, you know, I watch a little bit of that and EPL. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, because we're trying to get mad at team, man. We have a whole thing of the next few months we're going to get mad at team because us and a couple of our homeboys, a lot of us are EPL fans, and he feels left out. So he's trying to figure out his team.
I don't feel left out because I don't watch it. But I'm like, but I feel like, but everybody's like, they want me to be a part of it. And I'm like, I have to cover so many sports. It's hard for me to just pick another one to be.
I'm telling you, man, you get hooked in, man. You'll be up on Saturday morning.
But that's what I'm saying. In these times right now where things are just up in the air, I have more time to pick teams. So I'm going to get one. I'll watch it. I'm going to get the video game. I'm sure that won't make my fiance happy, but I'll play it. I'll learn players that way, and then I'll go.
Yeah, don't get on no bandwagon. Don't be like, I'm Manchester City or Manchester United.
Hold on. Stop it. What are we – hold on. I'm a Manchester United dude. Ain't no bandwagon. I'm United. I ain't no you city. Fuck a city, man. Ain't no city, man. Come on, man.
I feel some type of way there. Either way it goes, I gotta be a distance fan. I'm used to that again. 49ers, Carolina, hell, all of that.
Hey,
man, come back on.
The Jets and Niners play each other this year.
Well, hopefully we can get it in, first of all, first and foremost.
Sure. By the way, because my wife's a Niners fan too, because she's from California.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, we think about going to see that game.
Well, hopefully you can go, first of all. Hopefully that happens. You know, the Niners are playing the Cowboys this year, and I sure had that on my calendar of things I wanted to go do. But hopefully it happens. You know, we'll see what we look like. You know, I feel like y'all is a team that's on the come up. And again, Pass Point Paradox, man, this could be our year, bro. We never know.
Yeah, I'm hoping for at least 500 seasons. I'll be happy with that.
You should get that.
Wow, 500.
I think you should get that. You got a rookie quarterback in Miami. You got a quarterback from West Virginia in New England, and then you got the Bills. Bills are the only team you really got to look at and figure out.
I'm only worried about the Bills now.
New England, Miami finished the year in a good place. They definitely almost ruined their chances to get Tua that they needed to get, but that's going to be a whole process. So y'all are one of those teams that's in the position that can get that, you know, capitalize on the situation. So, who knows?
Eight wins, baby.
Eight wins. Damn.
Hey, eight wins, and the Warriors are going to be in the top three of the draft with a lot of good guys coming back. It could be a great year for you, man.
We're about to get the number one pick in the draft for the Warriors.
We call it the Steve Fisher. We call it the Steve Fisher, the 8-8. You know what I'm saying? The fitty-fitty. You just want the fitty-fitty. That's all you want is just fitty-fitty.
Yeah, man.
Not Steve Fisher, Jeff Fisher.
Fisher. That's all he did. 500, 8-8 every year.
8-8, baby. That's all you say. You just want the Jeff Fisher.
Jeff Fisher is the poster boy for C's get degrees.
Well, thank you, Rob, for coming on, man. We appreciate it, man.
It was fun, man. I'm glad I got to see you again, D. It's been a long time.
Yeah, man. Well, next time I come out the D.C. area, man, I might have to drive down there, man. That's what you
guys probably have me back on again, but year 2033.
Hey, no, actually, I'm going to tell you what. I'm getting ready to start my own vehicle, man, Scenario Sports Pod. And we go definitely, we and you are definitely going to rap about more things than just what we did here today, man.
No doubt, man. Guys, thank you so much for having me, man. You know, salute. You know what I'm saying? Let's do it. You know, enjoy your weekend. Stay safe. Stay alive. Stay black. All that good
stuff. Stay black and don't die.
No doubt.